Hello there, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of CookieCast. Today on CookieCast is the football podcast. We're talking football, which might surprise you. No, seriously, we're talking football. International break coming up, but it does mean we're talking about international football. If that's your thing, then stay tuned. Before we get started, please do consider like, share, subscribe, and comment. Leave a review where you can leave a review. And obviously the main, super important one there is share the podcast around. If you know someone who's into football, send them this podcast. Simple as that. Right, let's get started. Here we go. This is CookieCast, football podcast.
Recording in progress.
Yes, indeed. Welcome on in, ladies and gentlemen. It's your weekly fix of footballing nonsense from us here at the CookieCast Podcast Network. Obviously, can't do it alone. So, for those of you watching on YouTube, you'll be able to see the faces that are joining me this week. For those of you joining us via the audio method, those voices will become apparent right now. Welcome on in, Mr. Cook, Mr. Womansea, Mr. Moore. How are we this week, gentlemen?
As always, all kinds of average.
Well, you couldn't really get down or up this week, because you had...
We'll come to that, I'm sure.
Sort of. So... just the three games to cover from last week's predictions. And then I believe there's something that might be brought up from one of our perspective that may involve a little bit of discussion. But we'll come to that when we come to it. Our first game of week 33's fixtures saw Luton Town taking on Nottingham Forest in the Premier League. On paper, a relegation six-pointer, no less. How did it pan out in the end for the Forest boys, Mr. Moore?
I think when we talked about it last week, it was like one of the ones where it was that, you know, important game. Everybody talked about how it's difficult to go to Luton. Obviously, the shitty little ground that it is. The fact that you have to go through the Domino's entrance, which I shared with all of you as well.
That's where you get your free Domino's, isn't it? For turning up.
That would be the only reason why I would go to that ground. I noticed how Forrest kind of stealthily slipped that into their feed through the day. And they did it twice. I'm not sure whether the picture's still on their actual Instagram page of the Domino's entrance to Luton. So obviously a 3 o'clock on a Saturday kickoff, very rare. Yet, that's what we got. So that means we got to listen to the dulcet tones of Paul Merson commentating on it on Gillette Soccer Special, which he then proceeded to declare that Forest dominated the game by the sound of it, seemed to kind of have good control of it, kept hold of the ball. I think Ross Barkley was the biggest threat to Forest. I think he had a good few shots on goal. Forest managed to hold up against it, and then 6 minutes before half time took the lead. Nice flowing move. Gibbs White crosses it in. Chris Wood tucks it into the back of the net. Nice, kind of excellent. That's just what you want just before half time. Go in, get yourself settled down, and start again in the second half. And you know, kind of, I think I've spoken about this several times over this season. Is Forest, it's not even an inability to, you know, like, if you've got your foot on the neck, just finish it. Like, don't kind of let up. And, you know, the whole kind of thing all the way through, all through the second half, you sat there, Mercer's going on, oh, you know, this is easy streets for Forest. They're taking it, they're controlling it, this, that, and the other. And then 89 minutes, Luke Berry, I think. Berry anyway, pops up at the back stick, and it, well, I think it was a header from one of the defenders. He pops up and sticks it in the back of the net. Shock horror, it's from a set piece. 1-1 draw. To which, yeah, so then it finishes 1-1. So at a point where you could kind of put some real distance between, let's face it, the main rival for relegation this season has turned into your stood pat. And obviously the thing that we're going to discuss later makes it even more egregious. I did some research on Forest conceding goals. I didn't just go from the 80th minute onward, I went from the 85th minute onward and how many goals they conceded. Unfortunately, I don't have that research on me because I left it at work. But it has basically cost us somewhere between, from memory, 6 to 10 points this season, conceding in, like, what, the last 5 minutes of the game plus added time. All of those points against Luton. Not great. And like I said, when we come to discuss the other thing, keep those 4 points against Luton in mind, everybody.
Yes, no spoilers here, but that may come into force later on in the podcast. Predictions wise, myself and Mr. Cook had gone for Forest wins. Andy had gone 2-0. I had gone 2-1. I went with the Gibbs White Hudson Odoi combo and a Morris go for Luton, so I get 0 points. Andy had got a 1-1 and Wood, so bagged himself a bonus point for the goal scorer. Matt had gone completely optimistic and gone 3-2 Luton. Sadly, didn't have Berry or Wood in his goal scorers. So gets 0 points. Stu had a 2-2 draw, so bags himself a point for the result. Sadly, also didn't have Berry, and he also didn't have Wood. Not a great weekend.
I think that's just a day rumour to them.
Well, all I can say is terrible weekend for you, son. We move on to, speaking of terrible weekends, takes us to Middlesbrough versus Blackburn Rovers. Where I didn't even bother to watch the extended highlights of this one to get a flavour of the game. You may understand why when I tell you that it finished 0-0. So I got all of the information I needed from the 1 minute and 50 second long clips Sky Sports app very handily provided to me. Looked like it was a game of not very many chances. The best of those did seem to fall to the Borough. From what I can remember, there was two rather good chances that on another day might have been buried by the respective people. The first one was a clip back from Luke Ayling that managed to work his way to the back post, and Marcus Spores got something on it but managed to put it back across the face of goal as opposed to sort of getting on target. And the second one was a chance for Sammy Silvera. I can't remember who it was. It might have even been Ayling again who had the initial shot that cannoned back off the bar. Two Borough players got in the way of each other. One of them tried to control it, and Silvera completely fresh air shot it. The chance. So the game panned out to a rather dull 0-0 draw. Doesn't do much for Borough's slender hopes for the playoffs, and doesn't do much to quell the relegation fears that Blackburn find themselves in currently. Not only that, didn't really do much for the podcast, as we all had varying degrees of Middlesbrough win. Me and Andy had both gone 2-0. Stu had gone 1-0, Matt had gone 2-1. So yeah, no points across the board there. And our third and final game of week 33 saw Andy's adopted team of Manchester City taking on Newcastle United in the quarterfinals of the FA Cup. And all I'll say is, happy anniversary, fellas. It's that time of the year where we all celebrate. It is now 69 years since the black and white barcodes last lifted a piece of silverware, and long may it continue. Can we see if we can get to triple digits?
It's like Easter, you never show, it never happens the same time every year, but it happens every year. You can't quite plan things around it. But it, you
it's
know
it's almost like the
welcome.
Easter. It's like the Easter of football, isn't it? Because it's never the same time of year, but you know that it's coming. So yes,
and it's cleansing for everybody.
Sadly, Newcastle were unable to overcome their Manchester rivals. Manchester City running out 2-0. I saw the first goal. I didn't see the second, but I have it on good authority that both were horrendous deflections. So were Newcastle pretty much allowing to, or enabling their own downfall by not defending the ball. The part, I believe it was the first half that I saw. Yeah, just, it was all Man City. There was a couple of chances that Newcastle had, but I can't remember there being much in the way of Newcastle being in the game at any point, shall we say. Two goals for Bernardo Silva. Again, there was some slight deflection taking place and whatnot, but they do go down as Bernardo Silva goals. So, from a podcast perspective, everyone picked up points on this as we all had Manchester City wins. Matt had gone 2-1, Haaland, Foden and Isak. Stu had gone 3-1, Foden, Haaland, De Bruyne and Gordon. Myself and Andy both had 2-0 Manchester City. So bag ourselves 2 points on the correct score line. Sadly, neither of us had Bernardo Silva to score, so we just kept 2 points for the result. So, what that means for the week? Three games, 1 point for Mr. Moore. 3 games, 2 points for myself and Mr. Bubensee. Winning the week, 3 games, 3 points for Mr. Andrew Cook. Well done to you, sir. So, that's week 33. Done and dusted. Nice little bow on it. But before we get to week 34 and its international flavour, there came some news, I believe on Monday?
Yeah, Monday.
Monday. News was released by the Premier League that they had finished their investigation into the profit and sustainability regulations, PSR, I think.
Independent committee had finished their hearing, so there was a 2-day hearing on the 5th and 6th of March, I think.
The upshot is that, much like Everton, Nottingham Forest find themselves on the end of a points deduction. Now, obviously, the Everton one was 10 points, which was initially given out, but then later reduced to 6 upon appeal. Nottingham Forest found themselves deducted 4 points. So now, sadly, find themselves in the relegation zone. As Matt was saying earlier, those 4 points have dropped against Luton, proving rather costly at the moment. I imagine you have thoughts, and would potentially like to air those thoughts right now.
I think like obviously it was 4 points reduced by 2 points because Forest cooperated well. And I think there's a kind of, I think the thing that there's several sides of this that I've got. I think the ownership of the club, whilst they've the club and stuff like that, has been very arrogant, particularly since we got promoted. And there's this kind of like, you know, the statement, you know, like I've seen a lot of fans like, oh, Forest fans, but I like the statement. It was like, up yours to the Premier League and stuff like that. And you think, yeah, but you knew what the rules were. You've blatantly kind of ignored the rules. The fact that we lost 40 million on the year that we got promoted is dangerous because that would have cost us points. If we hadn't gone up, that would have cost us points in the Championship. So I think it's just kind of like, we're really disappointed. We cooperated. We did this. We did the other. And you know, what you tried to do is you tried to sweet talk them into not giving you a points deduction. There was always going to be a points deduction. You know, there's bits where people have said, oh, you know, we might just get away with a fine here. We might get away with a suspended points deduction. We might get away with... There was always going to be a points deduction. Yeah, because they want to make examples of people, and unfortunately, Forrest have fallen into that trap. So I think it was, what, 34.5 million loss over what they could lose. So they lost 95 million over three seasons, which was 34.5 million more than they could lose, because they could lose 61 million. That is compared, and I think the other side of it is, at what point are we going to realise that this isn't a fair competition as well? Because if Forrest can lose, you know, Forrest get promoted, they could have lost, they can lose a total of 61 million. It's the same for your two clubs if you were to go up. You then got to compete with teams that have got a possible 105 million loss. They've also had Premier League money. And I think it's going to be interesting to what they do with Everton, because Forest have had the book thrown at them because they've lost a load of money. But at what point are we going to point to Everton and go, but you've managed to do it 2 years on the bounce with getting over £100 million from the Premier League plus anything else that comes in there, and still not doing anything about it? And you haven't sold any, you know, they sold Richarlison. They haven't sold anybody else. And I think that's a kind of thing to look at it. Looking back at Forrest, and, you know, I think I've always been the one who's the pessimistic side of the Forrest fan, and I've always think I've been realistic. It's either gross incompetence or it's belligerence that have left us in this position. And I think part of it is a combination of the two. You know, you've got, I think we've talked about it, you've got the three setups. You've got the owner and his son buying players, Jesse Lingard, for example. You've got a sporting director and that kind of, that tree of it, where they're buying them players. And then you've got the manager having a say as well. But, you know, and that led to kind of things like Jonjo Shelvey being bought in the Christmas thing. That was apparently a Cooper buy. I think there's just been, you know, I know they wanted to stay in the league, but there's just been some absolutely wasted kind of money. So, like, the kind of examples that I looked at was, we bought Josh Bowler from Blackpool for £2.5 million. That was a waste of money. They bought that the Korean guy for £3.5 million. That's £6 million of wasted. They've never even set foot on the pitch for Forest. They just went straight out on loan. We didn't have a sponsor on the shirt last season. That's £7 million compared to that's what they got this year. So you look at those two, and that's £13 million. So then you're not that far off from where you should have been. So it shouldn't have taken a Brendan Johnson sale to get us back to where we were. It could have been, you know, you sell Joe Worrell in the summer for 10. You sell somebody else for, you know, you can sell three fringe players for a total of 20 million that gets you under that barrier, because you haven't wasted that extra money. You know, we could litigate the Lingard signing. It turned out not to be a good signing, but it wasn't obviously a bad signing at the time. It was a free transfer of a player who'd done it in the Premier League.
I think the problem with the Lingard signing for me is, like an outsider sort of looking at it, was, yes, fair enough, there wasn't a transfer fee. But the concern with that, whenever there's like a free agent, they say that, yeah, you don't have to pay the sign-on fee. Sorry, you don't have to pay the transfer fee. But the upshot of that is then it comes with a huge signing-on fee for the player.
Yeah.
So say they wouldn't have had to pay, like, let's just say like an arbitrary figure of £8.5 million. So I suppose Lingard's argument then from his agent would be, well, let's say you would have had to spend 8.5 million to bring my client in. So that money's still there for the club. So as a part of that, we'd like to take, say, 3.5 million as a signing on fee, and then we can discuss his wages moving forward. So you don't know how much of that was like sort of factored into the signing of Lingard. He could have had a ridiculously large signing on fee, which would have also gone against sort of the bank balance and stuff like that. You just don't know.
I think the thing that a lot of Forest fans have said is that kind of technically we weren't in, I don't know how it worked, but we hadn't overspent until the last 2 months of the kind of thing. So for the first 10 months up till May, up till the end of April, we were fine, and then somehow it tipped over in May and June. I don't know what happened. I don't know what kind of things bonuses or kind of clauses triggered in that time.
Because they didn't get relegated, there'll be a non-relegation clause which will probably bump some of the players' pay up by like 10 grand, 10% or something like that. That'll probably go on top, and then there'll be the bonus payouts for staying in the league and things like that. Agents' fees that probably come due at the end of the season.
But that boils down to, like Matt was saying, that's all in the management of it. Then that's not a surprise. Those things will have been set out at the point that the contracts were agreed. So, unless did they actually put those clauses in, believing that they might go down anyway?
I think one of the things I read in the Nottingham Evening Post was that Forest had budgeted on the fact that they would finish 12th in the league. So they were, instead of getting 100 back or whatever they got for finishing 17th or 16th, they budgeted for getting 125 million through the door by finishing 12th, which is ridiculous, to be fair. I just think, I looked at the list of the players that they signed, and I know it just seems like you don't want to kind of shit on people, but like, Omar Richards, who's never played a game for us. There's been like a lot of players who we've spent quite a bit of money on, who then did not work out, and then we've had to kind of send them on their way whilst thinking of Balls, who spent like 15 million on that play. So, yeah.
You're always going to have them clubs where you're going to get that player that costs a lot of money that doesn't do it. But unfortunately for Forest, it seems to have amalgamated that it's all happened at once.
I think, obviously, I said it all through last season. We needed to build a squad for the Premier League. So we bought a lot of players. And then we proceeded to buy a load more players in January. I just hope that they've learned a lesson. I'm very concerned they haven't. would be my kind of thing, and that we're going to be back having the same discussion this time next year. What I hope they do is they've not shown any, but I hope there's a little bit of kind of showing some remorse, and like an element of not putting the fans through it anymore. You know, it's been bad enough kind of sitting there waiting for it, and bad enough that this kind of absolute shit show of a season that we've had so far, to then go, right, we're going to appeal it as well now. And I just think, take four points, think, right, that's fine, we'll come back in, you know, at the end of, after the international break, hopefully these injuries will have cleared up, and we can just go and do the business. You know, realistically, there's probably like four, maybe five games that we can win in there. We've got Sheffield United, we've got Burnley, we've got Everton, we've got Wolves and Crystal Palace and Fulham. Within there should be games that we can win, and then it's academic, and then you can stick your two fingers up at the Premier League at the end of the season when we're still in the league, as opposed to playing this game where I think at some point they'll go, stop appealing. You knew what you did was wrong. You know, the Jono money can go to next year's financial fair play, and, you know, up yours.
Yes, it's certainly something that we'll have to keep an eye on, as, like you say, with the appeal, it's definitely not over. So, keeping that in mind, what we're going to do is we'll put ourselves off. We'll take a little break. We'll come back. We might discuss it again on the other side of the break. Obviously, it won't mean anything to you because it'll just carry on your feet. But we will be getting to the England fixtures that are due this week, as none of our teams will be playing due to the international break. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back after this very short.
Recording in progress.
See? For you, mere seconds. For us, it's been 8 weeks. So, week 33, been and gone. Forest 4 points, been and gone.
Caught.
Asshole. Sorry. Sorry.
That was caught, hey, man. That's
caught. Hey, to be fair, it's just Hull to go now. Just Hull to go for teams of ours that have had points taken off them by the Premier League.
No, we. Well, that won't be happening because our chairman wrote a letter this week, to an open letter to football fans about how the entire financial system is corrupt. So if he now fucks it up based on that, that's going to get reprinted and thrown back at him many, many times.
It doesn't have to be for financial reasons. Borough had their points taken off because they couldn't cobble a team of 11 players together to play a fixture. I'm going back 27 years to 1997.
Surely the manager could have just found like 8 of his mates or something.
So we said this at the time. They were like, so in hindsight, if they'd have just literally played the tea lady, the kit man, the kit man's dog, and anyone else who was connected with the club, just register them as a player and get them on the pitch, it would have been better for them than just not playing the fixture. Because they would have kept the 3 points that were taken off them, and they would have finished 14th the season that went down. So, absolutely ridiculous. But, yes, sadly, this podcast wasn't there 27 years ago when Borough got shafted by the FA. So, we won't go into that. So, as we said, week 34. No club fixtures for any of us as it's the international break. So instead, we'll turn our head to the England games that are being played. Now, no competitive fixtures here. These are both two friendlies, the first of which is England versus Brazil, which I'm just double-checking. Are either of these at Wembley? Or are they both at Wembley?
They're both at Wembley, aren't they?
I don't really know why my voice went so high. But
the ones after the season, the friendlies that lead up to the Euros, is it? They're out and about. There's one. This way.
Yeah, have they got one at, is it one at Sunderland or is it actually at St James's?
Well, I wasn't gonna say it, but you said it now, yeah, it's at St James's Park, yeah.
Terrible taste in the mouth. So England versus Brazil to be played this weekend. I suppose technically we all need to go last, as England are technically all of our team. So I'll open the floor. Who would like to give their prediction for England versus Brazil first?
Go on, I'll go.
Oh,
I've gone really boring. 1-1, Watkins and Vinicius Jr.
Big start for Watkins. You're not thinking El Capitan will be alright?
Nah, he's a bitch.
I don't think he'll play the first game, as soon as he got pulled out of the team training today. Again, not a day too much, but he's only really got the potential of 2 full days before the game. I think he'll play, but not until the second. Or if he does, it'll be as a subs performance, I think, personally.
Interesting. I think he plays. I think he starts. I think he scores. 2-2, England-Brazil. I've gone for Kane and Palmer. Score for England. Martinelli and Vinicius Junior for Brazil.
I think it's about time they played some proper teams rather than the six-a-side team from the pub that they have been playing in qualifying for year after year after year. Looking at the squad list, I was a little bit perturbed as to the fact that you think of Brazilian sides of old and how much better they were than the rest of the world. And actually, a lot of this current Brazil side are just made up of Premier League players, seemingly. So, whilst I think that would probably lend to probably more in England's favour in that regard, I've still got us down as a England 0, Brazil 2, to get done by the arse and old players Martinelli and Jesus. It's Easter weekend. You can't not pick Jesus. What the fuck are you doing?
It's not Easter weekend.
It's not quite Easter weekend, but we're nearly there.
How dare you blaspheme?
The beginning of Holy Week. That's the one. He's on his way.
Yeah, we'll go for that.
He's on his way. It's not Father Christmas.
I've been teaching that at school. You would think that it was a bit like Father Christmas. He's on his way. He's going to have a little donkey. A little donkey as well, that's all, that kind of thing. Getting ready for Palm Sunday, you know. All that business.
Lovely stuff. Go on then, Andy. You get the right to give us last dibs on England versus Brazil.
2-0 to England, obviously.
Obviously.
I've got Tony and Saka.
Tony, God, what are the odds? No, I'm asking Ivan. Ivan, if you can let us know, mate, what you got with the bookies. That'd be nice.
Speaking of odds, I haven't done any odds for the games this week on the basis that you could get England-Brazil odds, but you can't currently get England-Belgium odds.
Yeah, there's something strange about that. I think it's basically, there's something weird, like, if there's another game scheduled, for some reason they don't put any further like fixtures on from an international perspective, which just seems baffling. Just before
it's because they won't put a first goal scorer market out after the first game, just in case all of them get absolutely nailed.
Yeah, that's a good point. Just before we move on, did I say something before we started recording about Saka potentially also injured alongside Kane?
There's been some individual training programmes that have been utilised at the England camp. So Kane, Saka, Jordan Henderson, I mean, nobody cares about that one, but there was somebody else as well, but it wasn't a striker. I think four players had been, I was about to say pulled off on their own, but you know what I mean.
Was it ever? Oh, so it's not Jesus' birthday, it's their birthday. I know it's not Jesus' birthday on Easter.
Hey, Palm Sunday has a whole different meaning right now.
Oh, good Lord. And, it was a nice run we've had, you know, 5, 6 years. Which means our second and last game of week 34 is, as we said before, England versus Belgium. Andy, as you were last to go last time, do you want to be first to go this time? Do you have England-Belgium prediction?
Another 2-0 to the England. And for this one, I've gone with Kane and Palmer.
Very nice. I've gone on a similar vein to how Mr. Woodman's has gone for the first game. I've gone for Belgium to win this one. I've gone for 1-2. So I've gone for Saka to score for England, Lukaku and Doku to score for Belgium. Stu?
I don't think Kane will play the first game, but I do think he'll play this one. So I've got Kane to score in this game, and I've also got Doku to score, because he'll kick on, much like he did through the chest of the Liverpool player. Anyway, I've got one.
Which means Mr. Moore gets to bring us to the end this week. What have you got, sir, for England versus Belgium?
I've gone for a 2-2 draw. Bellingham and Foden for England. And Bakayoko and Doku for Belgium.
Even though you've just said it, I've completely forgotten who you said is his second England goal scorer.
Foden. Yeah.
And then your Belgian goal scorers were
Bakayoko and Doku.
All of them.
I must admit, I have no idea who Bakayoko is.
I looked at the squad list and his name was the first on the strikers list, so I thought, he must be the starter one. Well, he isn't, but you know.
There you go. Just the two games. Sad times when it's international break week. Don't like it personally. Not a big fan. I mean, I say that, I might end up watching the games if I'm really, truly bored. But I'd much rather be watching club football. That brings us to the end. Unless you gents have got anything you want to bring up this week?
Just very brief, that my lot are away on a warm weather camp in Turkey. And have just... They're away, obviously, minus all the players on international duty. So, Seri, Philogene, Morton, Ohio, and Omo are not included, but all the rest of the squad went, along with 100 City supporters, 50 season ticket holders and their guests. And they've announced a game against international side, Curaçao. Apparently it's a Caribbean island. Caribbean champions in 2017... It takes place on Thursday at 1 PM British time. So whilst they may be there for a bit of warm weather training, they're also going to get a game in as well. But how often do your club side get to play against a national side, even if they are a world footballing minnow, perhaps? But I did find out that they're managed by former Sunderland manager Dick Avocar.
Interesting.
They have a random one. But yeah, that's they're doing all the PR stuff for it at the moment. Nothing particularly exciting to come up, apart from the fact that 50 season ticket holders got to take their guests, and I am very, very jealous.
Well, I like how old Dick Abercar's traded in Glasgow for a nice sunny climb to sail off into his retirement, bless him.
Apparently he came out of retirement in January specially to take a job on a Caribbean island. What a heartache that must have been.
Listen, the guy is clearly giving back to the football community. I'm pretty sure when he was actually Sunderland manager, he quit because he didn't feel like he could do it full time anymore. Strange that he doesn't want to be in Sunderland 24/7, but he wouldn't mind being on a Caribbean island. That is all. Why do you think?
Why on earth not? It is just as sunny.
the game on Thursday has been played in the Antalya Stadium in Turkey, so it's not like it might even be a slight bit cooler for them in Turkey than it is in their homeland. So, not entirely sure.
Quite possibly. With the sort of the all expenses paid nature of this tour, has he got some sort of hotel that he owns that he's put everyone up in, or did it not really go into that?
So the players stay at it's like a sports complex thing, and all of the fans and some of the staff stay at it's called Regal something complex. But yeah, they stay at a resort, basically. I'm not sure if it's a resort that is owned by him. Like, but obviously, like, Arjun's like Turkish Simon Cowell, so he like, it's insane that he's like a proper famous in that part of the world, whereas here it's just a dude.
But yeah,
the fact that like film crews follow him around and stuff is just strange. So they flew out on the 18th of March, and the winners that have gone have, it says they will enjoy all-inclusive accommodation at the Kremlin Palace, which sounds proper swanky. I've just clicked on the website for it, and I'm a little bit scared about trying to find out the prices for it, because it does look a little bit poosh. Yeah, but yeah, they get to stay at the Kremlin Palace in Turkey. Anyway,
nice.
Yeah, if anything eventful happens, then I shall let you know next week.
Well, heaven and jump. So, as usual, thank you to these three wonderful gentlemen for joining me to go through the ins, outs, ups and downs. Sadly, in some of our cases, more than others of this particular week. Come back next week where we'll go through the results of the England games, and thankfully we'll have some much nicer domestic football to look forward to for the weekend and coming week after. And it will be a bit of a bumper one next week, as it's, as we stated earlier, the Easter break, so all of our teams will be very busy when it comes to next week's fixtures. So thank you as always for tuning in. Very much appreciated. Join us again next week where we'll break it all down and do it all again for you. So then, stay classy. Take care of yourselves. Make sure you look after each other as well. We'll see you next week. Bye.
So there you go. What do you think to that? English football. Yeah. Thank you for watching. Thank you for listening. Thank you for being here. Before you go, please do consider like, share, subscribe and comment. Leave a review where you can leave a review. 5-star, obviously. And check out the website, thecookiecast.com. There we've got social media links and an email button. And that way you can get in touch with us. That's it for this one. Till next time, I'm going to say bye. And I'll see you then.
Thank you for listening to these grumpy old men talk about football. If you've enjoyed this episode, please like, share and subscribe.